The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
After 7 months of deliberations, the World Health Organization has granted emergency use listing for Covaxin. This is the first Indian vaccine to be approved by the WHO. The WHO's technical advisory group, which cleared Covaxin, has regulatory experts from around the world. The global health body is not facilitates international travel for lakhs of Indians to countries where WHO-approved vaccines are permitted. But there is a caveat. The World Health Organization has said there is insufficient data to prove safety and efficacy of Covaxin in pregnant women.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. That's big news for a lot of people. So I'll lead off with that today. First of all, it's great to be with you. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. Covaxin. You can jot that name down. A lot of people were waiting for a vaccine called Novavax. They thought it was a moral and ethical alternative to Pfizer, Moderna, or to, of course, Johnson & Johnson. And again, and I'll say this, I'll put it up front, you know, you can't be any more Catholic than the Pope, right? You have to be faithful to what the Church teaches. I always side with the Church. And when the USCCB, when they're moral theologians, when the Pope himself says, hey, you're okay getting the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine, I know a lot of people disagree with that, that you're in good moral, you're on good moral ground to do that. So I'm just going to say that a lot of people still object, and they may object for medical reasons, as Aaron Rodgers claims he has an allergy to something in those vaccines. You might object for moral reasons. So those last two vaccines, the vaccines of Pfizer and Moderna, were tested in fetal cell lines. I mean, Johnson & Johnson's much closer to the immoral act. So, you know, I know many people, including myself, I wouldn't take J&J. Again, if these are your only alternatives, the Church says you can go ahead and do that. But a lot of people are waiting. People have written to me and said, when's Dr. Dabali going to be back in? I want to talk to him about Novavax. I just saw a story, and you just heard the report. There is a new vaccine called Covaxin. Some claim it is the pro-life COVID vaccine that many people have been waiting for. I saw this report in LifeSite News about 3 weeks ago, late October. They talked about a bona fide inactivated virus vaccine that's not mRNA-based. I know some people are concerned about that. That's a new technology, and people want to see how it played out. This was developed by a company in India, and it could potentially prove a breakthrough for a long-awaited vaccine that would satisfy these dual concerns of both the ethical, you know, unimpeachability and the medical safety. So if you're in either one of those camps, you should turn up the radio. Definitely share this conversation with others a little bit later, so they can get clued in. In addition to being just a standard true blue vaccine, it was cultured in cell lines derived from monkey tissue. Covaxin also has, as far as they can determine, no known connections to cell lines derived from aborted fetal tissue. So will we see this here in the States? Coming up in just a second. Let me bring him in. Let me welcome Dr. Dabali. Let's get him right into the conversation. By the way, we'll take your calls. I only have him for a few minutes this afternoon. He won't be on as long as he normally does. So if you've got questions or comments or you want to get in on the conversation, here's your number. It's 888-914-9149. And, Doctor, it is good to have you with us today. Dr. Dabali is an infectious disease doc. He hails from the great state of Illinois, outside the Chicago area. You can check him out at germbusters.com. That's his website. He's been with us for months now, years, really, as we've been making our way through this pandemic. Doctor, thank you. It's always good to talk with you.
Great to be with you, Drew. And, what's happening here with this Covaxin name, there's so much confusion because I liken it to a pileup of vaccine names on the COVID highway. There's so many vaccine names that are similar, and it's hard to keep them straight sometimes. But this is an inactivated COVID virus vaccine. So you think about the polio vaccine. They take the polio virus, they grow it, and then they treat it with something that inactivates it. This is similar. And then they put it in with something called an adjuvant, which intensifies the immune response to it. And now this vaccine was approved by the World Health Organization, which means that the United States has to recognize it as a vaccine that allows you entry into the United States as being vaccinated. But it doesn't obligate the United States to accept the vaccine for administration to U.S. citizens. Now, Novavax, which is a much bellied about vaccine that I'm waiting for and, you know, many of my patients are waiting for, that's more like, that's similar to this. It's more traditional vaccine. It's made up of little, you know, particles with the spike protein sticking out, but there's no messenger RNA. There's no association in the design or manufacture of it with the aborted fetal cells. However, it was tested against, you know, those cells. But in any case, that company, Novavax, reached an agreement with the Serum Institute of India, which is the world's largest manufacturer of vaccinations, which makes this Covaxin. And they're going to market the Novavax, make it in India and market it in Asia as a similar name called Covavax. So it's similar to Novavax, but it's Covavax. So Covavax and Covaxin are different vaccines. Now, a lot of people ask me what's going on with the Novavax. Well, it's been approved in Indonesia, so you can get it in Indonesia, you know, to people who get vaccines. It's an application in India, and there's an application before the World Health Organization for Novavax right now. And they say that they will be dropping their data at the FDA by the end of this year. Now, they've said end of the first quarter, end of the second quarter, end of the third quarter, and then now by the end of the year. They do have some talent now that has experience shepherding FDA applications through, and that's what's different now as compared to 6 months ago. So Novavax has some experience there. So I'm really hoping that they apply and get approval here in the United States. Now, there's a lot of people who were in the trial here in the United States and Mexico, but in the U.S., citizens that got Novavax vaccine, they're considered to be not vaccinated. So if they got double vaccinated with Novavax, which the efficacy is similar, if not the same, as the messenger RNA vaccines, and it actually bears out a little better against the some of the, like the Delta variant strain and the other strains, the side effect profile is radically less than the messenger RNA vaccines. But those people that got double vaccinated, if they're healthcare workers or whatever, they're facing expulsion from their jobs because it's not considered that they're doubly vaccinated. Now, if you go to like Michigan State University as a student and you come from, say, China, Michigan State University is accepting any vaccine from anywhere in the world that's been approved by local authority as efficient or as approved for being fully vaccinated, which is really kind of unusual, but that's what they're doing. But many here in the United States, many of my patients, many people I know, other healthcare workers and so on, are trying to wait for the Novavax before they get vaccinated because of the issues that you described before.
When it comes to Novavax, though, there's no connection to aborted fetal lines at all? It's not even tested in those lines?
It's tested.
It is tested. How does that differ from Pfizer tested. Then or from Moderna then in terms of the ethics of it?
Well, I guess the if you boil it down to the essence, the ethics of it are similar, if not the same. The Novavax had less of a testing, can I say, experience than did the messenger RNA vaccines. But it's a more traditional vaccine, and the side effect profile is much less. There's a lot of people who won't take the messenger RNA vaccines because of the concern over side effects such as myocarditis, neurologic issues, the association that many have made with sudden death after the vaccine and so on. Those events, in the numbers that we recognize and understand, they're very low. They're in the 0.001% of 1% of the people to get vaccination. But, I mean, they do exist. I mean, I know I have patients in my own practice who have gotten vaccinated and they've had neurologic issues or other issues, reactivation of like shingles, viruses, and stuff like that. They've been a little difficult to manage. But for the people who are declining the vaccination because of concern over side effects, the Novavax is an excellent answer. And, you know, I personally, having, you know, some training in bioethics, I'm not, you know, a professor by any means or that learned, but having studied, you know, doing the NCBC course and studying for master's in bioethics, I personally don't have an ethical issue with the messenger RNA vaccines, the Pfizer or the Moderna. I have concerns over their side effect profile and so on.
Right.
But the J&J I would never take, and I advise my patients not to take it, because it's basically made in a broth of, you know, the aborted fetal cells. Right. Now, you know, a lot of people don't understand how profound, you know, this whole fetal association is. Regeneron makes the monoclonal antibodies, and a lot of people don't realize that those monoclonal antibodies originated in hybridized mice. Mice that were born with, you know, engineered for no immune system. They knock the immune system out, and then they grafted in human immune system. Now, Regeneron won't say how they did it, but the way everybody does it is they take fresh fetal tissue and put in an immune system into the mice, which is human. And they then inject the mice with the agent, develop the, you know, antibodies are developed by the mice, which have a human immune system because of the incorporation of the fetal immune system tissue. And then they isolate that antibody, and then they make it, you know, they synthesize it in the lab, and then that's, I mean, those are the antibodies that everybody's going for now. And that's a much closer association. You know, I don't know for sure that Regeneron does that in their VelociImmune mouse system model, but it's likely that that's the way it is. I can't find any, and I've contacted the company. It's over months I've been trying to find this information out to confirm it. But, you know, a lot of the medicines that we're using here have the same types of associations. So
yeah, I saw an article, Doctor, the other day that Regeneron, their shares actually surged as you know, the evidence came out that their antibody cocktail, if you will, cuts COVID risk by about 81.6%. Talking almost 82%. That's absolutely amazing to me. And I don't know how this is all going to shake out. You know, Pfizer's coming out with a pill. Merck's coming out with a pill. You've got Regeneron. You've got Covavax, possibly. What do you see on the frontier? And we'll take a few calls for you, too, because I know you can stay for a few minutes today. But if you want to get in, by the way, 888-914-9149. What do you see, you know, in the not-too-distant future in terms of treatment for COVID-19? Pills, Regeneron, new vaccines? What do you see coming?
Well, the major issue with COVID is this is something that humanity has never seen before. I mean, there were cousins to it, but humanity has never seen it before. So that was the major problem. And to be honest with you, the Delta variant did something quite dramatic in being so infectious. I mean, I'm not sure that everyone in the world has been exposed to COVID by now, but right now you have a mix of people who have vaccine-related immunity and natural immunity, and there are very few people that haven't maybe had natural, you know, had one or the other. And I'm quite hopeful that maybe the bulk of the whole issue is pretty much behind us. It might not be, but it could be. I mean, we look at these football games where people are packed in like sardines. Nobody's wearing masks, and we're not seeing COVID situations afterwards. Excuse me. And those people are vaccinated and unvaccinated, and they're a mix of people with natural immunity and vaccine-related immunity and maybe no immunity. And the new data coming out with the vaccines out of Israel appears to show that quite possibly if your immunity is based on being vaccinated, we might be into this accelerated boosters where people have to get boosters every 3 months in order to maintain immunity, not 6 months. And so, you know, that'll be difficult. I mean, that's more of a treatment than a prevention type of manner. So, I don't really know where we're going, but there's a lot of stuff coming up. A lot of it's very expensive. The data on ivermectin actually is pretty good in prevention, but it's not people taking it every week and for months at a time. It's taking it, you know, at the first signs of infection is what they did in India and Mexico, and they only took it for like a week, and it lowered hospitalization rate and death rates by 70%. Granted, the numbers in the studies are small. They weren't controlled, placebo-controlled studies, but, you know, they're pretty good, you know.
Right.
Data's pretty good.
Well, let's do this. Let's grab a call or two for you. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. Taking a look at the latest in regards to COVID-19, where attitudes are, what the latest polling is revealing, and ultimately what's on the horizon in terms of treatment for it. We've talked about Band-Aids. We know a lot of those are going to go into effect. And the Biden administration has recently told businesses, look, you need to implement this. A lot of people protesting. It's gone to court. We'll see when that gets all all settled out. But let me go to Mary in Las Vegas, get her into the conversation as well. Hi, Mary. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hi. A friend got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and probably in June or July. In the past 7 months, he's had hives and sores and very uncomfortable, and nothing seems to help. Have you heard of this type of reaction, or do you have any suggestions as to what he can do or tell the doctors? They don't seem to listen to him.
He has sores in his mouth?
Yes.
Or on his skin?
No. On his skin. It's kind of like hives, bumps, and sores all over, and it's just extremely uncomfortable, and he itches. And he has gotten medication for that, but...
I've had a number of patients that have had the Moderna vaccine, and following that, they've had low-level reactivations of the shingles virus that have been quite atypical, unusual. They've had kind of like disseminated sores on their skin, which kind of look like shingles once you see the antibodies being really sky high, and respond somewhat to medicine against shingles. But your doctor may want to check the shingles virus antibodies, and if they're elevated, he might respond to a medicine called acyclovir or Valtrex, or one of those medicines. If he has hives, one of the best antihistamines that nobody uses anymore is a medicine called Tagamet or cimetidine. It was used for stomach ulcers in the past, but it had some side effects. But I find that when patients have hives for no apparent reason, that's really effective taking it twice a day.
All right, let me move along, doctor, just because of time. Terry's listening in Gallup, New Mexico. Terry, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I was just curious. I keep hearing that your immunity becomes diminished the more vaccines that you take along with the boosters. Is that something that you would know about?
Well, vaccine-related immunity is a really complicated subject. I have like a $500 textbook on it.
Already have natural immunity, and they're requesting that you get a vaccine afterwards. Right. Does it diminish your natural immunity?
Good question.
It doesn't diminish your natural immunity. Actually, it bolsters it tremendously. If you get one of the messenger RNA vaccines after having natural immunity, your antibodies rise on average 140 times.
Wow.
And the T cell immunity goes up by fivefold, 500%. So how long lived is it? Only a few months. But similar to hepatitis B, we vaccinate people against hepatitis B, and in the healthcare community, you have to get blood, you have to prove that you were immunized for hepatitis B. But then after a couple of years, good antibodies are now non-detectable. But what we found is that when people are exposed to that agent, like they're taking care of a patient with hepatitis B, or whatever, they have an astounding memory response. So the immune system, although it appears to be quiet by measuring blood antibodies, it's actually ready to pounce, ready to jump, ready to kick into action whenever it gets exposed to it again. And that's what we're finding, the studies that were done on cancer patients where they took bone marrow out and they looked at the plasma cells in the bone marrow. They found that despite the fact that these patients maybe had natural infection or vaccine-related immunity, natural infection more than vaccine-related immunity was a study I'm quoting. They actually found that the plasma cells there, despite the fact that people didn't have measurable antibodies in their blood months after their natural infection, the plasma cells were rich in memory and ready to jump into action and fight the infection if presented with it again. Hmm. If somebody wanted to sit in the catbird seat, like I've got the best immunity in the world to this, it's a person with natural infection that gets a messenger RNA vaccine after. So far, that's the best immunity.
Okay. Well, thank you, Terry, for answering that. I appreciate it.
You got it. In fact, we've got Katie in Lexington, Kentucky. She's asking a similar question. If a person has had a vaccine and get COVID, you know, how does that affect their immune system? Katie, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I was wondering because I got COVID. I was not vaccinated. My husband, who was vaccinated, got COVID. And I was wondering if his immune system would build up the same robust immune response if he'd already been vaccinated as somebody who had just complete natural immunity. How does being previously vaccinated affect one's natural immunity?
I'm not really sure I've seen data on that. One would think that if you developed a natural infection that was symptomatic after having vaccine-related immunity, that your immunity would become broader. So somebody with natural immunity, I liken it to a car. If you're getting a vaccine, you just have one part of the organism or the virus, and that might be like the rearview mirror on a car. Tires on a car. So you develop antibodies to tires on the car. But if you have natural infection and you develop natural immunity, you have antibodies to the tires, you have antibodies to the rearview mirrors, the license plate holder, to the steering wheel, to the horn, to the turning signal, to everything, right? It's much, much broader development of antibodies. But I don't think that we have data yet to talk about that. We do know that people that have asymptomatic infections do not develop as broad an immunity or as brisk or a deeper response as people that have had symptomatic infections and recovered. So that we do know.
Katie, thank you.
Okay.
Let me jump to Therese in Chicago quickly because she's already been vaccinated, but his question about boosters, and this is an important question, I think, for a lot of people who are listening that have already had their two shots, should they boost up? Therese, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Drew. I was wondering, for Dr. Tabali, I had the Pfizer vaccine back in March, 8 months ago, and I'm in my early 50s. Should I get the booster shot or not?
Well, that's a good question, and there's a lot of governmental requirements that are emerging, and they used to say that you were fully vaccinated when you had two, but if you work in a job where there's going to be a mandate or risk of loss of employment because of it, then you're not going to be fully vaccinated anymore after two shots. It's going to change to three shots, The booster is helpful. The data from Israel show that definitely that the antibody levels drop off after 6 months, and they've had a lot of people admitted to the hospital. Older, granted, they're older, maybe over 60, 80 years old, and they've had increased deaths among the vaccinated population. But again, these are people that are immune compromised with either cancer or severe immunological issues, or very aged, or with severe comorbidities. But if you're 50 and in otherwise good health, and you're just looking for your own health prevention, you probably don't need to be revaccinated. But if you're working in healthcare or working for the government or for the military or whatever, they're going to tell you that no, you're not vaccinated anymore. After two, you're going to need three. And I don't know. I personally don't understand where this is going to end because, like I say, the data, you'll hear about this a month from now from other people, but they're going to start talking about giving you a booster every 3 months. I mean, that's where the data is going. And that's crazy. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So, Doctor, and thank you, Therese, for your call. I think it's a great question. A lot of people are wondering, do you need the booster or not? Covaxin, I just want to circle back to that very quickly. That is available in India. It seems to be ethical. I don't know what the efficacy on that is. If somebody who's not gotten their Pfizer, their Moderna, their J&J because of, moral concerns that we discussed or because of medical concerns, because they're concerned about the mRNA or like Rogers, he's allergic to something in it. Can you get Covaxin, and do you think that'll be available here in the States?
It probably won't be approved by the FDA because it's really not a very effective vaccine. It's around 50%. Okay. It's kind of like the Sinovac vaccine from China. It's really not protective.
I've got to take a break, but to that point, Doctor, let me jump on and follow up on that. If it's only 50% in terms of its efficacy, we're seeing that Pfizer, Moderna, and a lot of the J&J, their efficacy rates have dropped, precipitously. I mean, Johnson & Johnson, it plummeted, I think, 13% in September from 86.4%. You see, I know this data. Pfizer, Moderna, they all have these decreasing efficacy rates.
It really depends on what are you talking about for efficacy, and that's prevention of infection. That's not prevention of hospitalization or death. That's prevention of acute infection. And so that's where they talk about sterilizing immunity or a serologic sterilizing ability, where you basically, the vaccine, you know, puts an armor around you that if you get exposed to the virus, you're not going to get sick. So that's where the efficacy is dropping so low. But in protection against death and severe illness requiring hospitalization, they still remain quite effective, over 80%. I mean, so it's a problem with the terms. The terms are being used interchangeably in different areas. Gotcha. And so so if you have a minute, I wanted to plug something, if you know.
Well, I'll tell you, hold the thought, doctor. Just hold the thought, because I could do it, take a break. When we come back, let's talk about it. I'd love to hear what you've got to say. And I got another question for you, too, believe it or not. Well, maybe we'll grab another caller, too. 80% of white-tailed deer in Iowa have been infected with COVID-19. Could they be a reservoir of the variant, you know, or of COVID, and can it leap from animal to human? If so, what does that mean, and how dangerous will that be? Gavin Newsom has been missing, or I shouldn't say missing, out of sight, really, ever since his last shot. Some are wondering if he's had side effects from it. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about Covaxin and the efficacy of these vaccines and pills from Merck and from Pfizer and so many other approaches to COVID-19. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Get caught up on that conversation you missed by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just select The Drew Mariani Show.
Well, thanks for joining me. If you are just hopping on board, great conversation today, taking a look at the latest regarding COVID-19. There's lots of news. Aaron Rodgers got a lot of attention, right? He claimed he had an allergy to something in the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines and chose, you know, not to be vaccinated. Used some, you know, alternative approaches to that. I know a lot of people are struggling with the type of vaccine to get. You know, as Dr. Dabali, my guest today, an infectious disease doctor, pointed out, he will not get, just for moral concerns, the Johnson & Johnson. I agree with him totally. I share that concern. I often point out that the church has said in certain circumstances that that's your only option, you can certainly get it. And of course, Pfizer, Moderna, they say, is far enough. The fact this was tested in fetal cell lines is far enough away from that act that it's ethical to get. And you know, the Holy Father encouraged people to get it. But a lot of people are saying, hey, look, I'm concerned about the medical aspects of this. I don't think it has been tested long enough. It's taken a human study group here. I'd like to see how it plays out. Other people are saying it's moral. So there was this vaccine called Covaxin that got a lot of attention recently, and it's developed by a biotech company in India. And a lot of people think that this might solve the dual concerns of the ethics and the medical safety. And, you know, it was cultured in cell lines derived from monkey tissue. So, but the efficacy, as Dr. Dabali pointed out, is not that great. So where do you go? What do you do? Merck, Pfizer, they've got a pill, Regeneron. We're hearing about the effects of that. Ivermectin. I mean, so much. It can be so confusing. Doctor, I want to grab a few more of calls for you before we go. But let me jump in with a story that I saw that has raised some concerns. And we've talked about this, I think, briefly in the past. I think it was in Ohio where we had reports of whitetail deer that had been infected with COVID-19. A report just came recently that came across my radar that said up to 80% of white-tailed deer in Iowa may be infected with COVID-19, and scientists are worried that the animals could become a reservoir for variants that could come back to haunt humans. And there was somebody from the universities from Penn State University who said, well, there's really not a whole lot of evidence of deer-to-human infection, but if the virus were to become widespread in deer and other animals, there is a chance that it can mutate or morph into a new variant and be passed back to people, and could be resistant to existing vaccines that are on the market right now. So if a deer can transmit a virus to humans, it would be a game changer. What do you know about it? How do 80% of the population of white-tailed deer in Iowa get infected?
Yeah, so you can call this the Bambi phenomenon or the Phalene phenomenon, but this is very concerning. At first it sounds, oh, that's kind of cute, the deer are sharing our issues with us, the COVID. But the points you made about the genetic reassortment that can occur in the animal population is very concerning. First thing is, like, how do they get this? Well, we do know that the virus is shed in bowel movements and so on. So, like, through sewage, through their drinking of water, they can initially contract it. They might not be close enough to the breath of a human, but they could get it through the wastewater, and then they could pass it amongst themselves. I don't think that it's deadly. They've been checking serum on the deer that have been caught and tagged for whatever reason. But one of the things I had concern about was, you know, in Iowa, the pig population. Could the pigs have it? Because Iowa's a big pig farming state. And they don't really find it in pigs, and they've actually done some laboratory experiments to try to give it to pigs and see if pigs can give it to one another, and that doesn't happen. Now, people may think, well, this is not just a big deal. This is, you know, just the deer. But the World Health Organization, one program that works in China with the WHO, is they have these inspectors that go through the pork farms that they have there and the avian chicken farms and so on, and they regularly check for avian flu strains and swine flu strains. And some of these things are deadly. The workers can die from them because they're in close proximity, but they haven't developed the ability to jump from human to human. So they test the birds and so on. We maybe don't hear about it that much in the United States, but they'll cull or, you know, slaughter millions and millions of chickens and pork, hogs over in China, if they get these strains that are of concern that have lethal genes in there that could possibly represent the emergence of a new lethal strain of influenza, you know, for humans.
Yeah.
Now, that's one surveillance program that worked in China as opposed to the COVID-19 surveillance program. But the whole fact that there is an animal reservoir that can geographically spread around the country is concerning.
Well, so, Karen, who's listening in St. Louis, Missouri, has a theory, doctor, and I know you are a deer, you're a Lyme expert, you're a tick expert. Let me go to Karen and bring her in. She's got a theory on how it might transmit from animals to humans. Karen, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I just was wondering if maybe the possibility of a tick is a vector, they could transmit it because the deer have ticks. Has anybody done research about that?
Yeah, how about that? A deer tick bites a deer and then bites a human. Can you get it transmitted that way? How about mosquitoes from one, you know, bloodborne body to another?
This is a survey of animals, and they're checking for antibodies. And so that's why they're saying that 80% of the deer have had COVID, because they're checking the antibodies in their bloodstream. So we don't really know the natural course of COVID in deer. Do they have it for 2 weeks and then they're better and not infectious anymore? So you have to have the deer being infectious at the time in order, you know, for these theories to play out. A tick, when people get bit by ticks and transmit Lyme disease, the deer bring it from geographic area A to geographic area B, but then the way the tick gets to the human is transmitted by rodents. So like a chipmunk or a squirrel or a rabbit will pick up the tick that the deer dropped off in area B and then bring it close to where humans are, you know, field mice and so on. Although people do get bit by ticks, especially hunters who kill their prey, that's where I would be most concerned about would be hunters who slay a deer, a field dress it, clean it, and then might be exposed in that manner to infectious particles from the blood or if they cut themselves. But the deer would have to be actively infected in the acute phase of infection and not recovered.
Gotcha. Right, let me go to Hawaii next. Maui, actually. Mary is listening to us there. Hi, Mary. Good afternoon, or good morning to you.
Good morning, Drew. Good morning, Father Tavali.
Good morning.
Dr. Tavali. I'm calling because I want to know where are we with the Novavax, and if that is still ethical to take that if that comes out.
Very good question.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
She was asking about Novavax again, doctor. She says she's been waiting for it to come out. When is it coming out, and would it be an ethical alternative for her?
Well, you know, again, you have all sorts of people saying, you know, defining what the ethics is. And I personally, you know, don't have an ethical problem with it. I'm looking forward to it, actually, and I would get the vaccine myself. But other people will say that because it was tested early in development against, you know, the cell lines, that it is unethical. So people will say that. You know, good people can be on both sides of that argument. We don't know when it's going to come out here in the United States. I check every single day. I Google Novavax and FDA, and just a couple of days ago, the company issued another report saying that they were going to be dropping it off at the FDA within the month, you know, within before the end of the year. And some of my friends
Big
are
Pharma,
talking about.
Do you think Big Pharma will? I mean, Pfizer, Moderna, the J&J. Do you think, you know, they don't want somebody else taking away from their bottom line? Do you think there's some? Any sort of animus or efforts to thwart or, stall that from coming to market?
Let me tell you some conspiracy theories. And Pfizer held the announcement of their vaccine until after the election of 2020. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if they had announced before the election of 2020, when they knew that they had a vaccine that was ready to go, if they announced that, there's no way that the election would have gone the way it did, the presidential election. So some people, you know, might think, well, all this need for boosters and everything is a payback issue. So there's significant financial concerns involved in here. If Novavax gets approved with their efficacy and their safety profile, the other vaccines will wilt on the vine. Nobody will want the other vaccines. The Novavax will become the dominant product and probably have 80 to 90% of the market within 12 months. So it's a huge financial issue, and there's no question. I mean, the FDA, I mean, we just had two of the leading experts in the world on vaccines and vaccine development and approval resigned from the FDA, and they cited political concerns.
Wow.
So, you know, they didn't think that people needed to be boosted. So, it's all political these days.
Interesting. Doctor, I only have a few moments left with you. I know you've got something that you're involved with. I think it's really great. I want to talk about that. Leah in California has a question, though. I'm not going to put her on air. Richard in South Texas, a bunch of other people. Let me see if I can just share their comments. And if you can make your comment quickly, I want to talk about what you're involved with. She's asking what the long-term effects of having a vaccine or a booster every 3 months is. And then Richard, he wants to know, you know, evaluating those who've gotten COVID and not gotten COVID, what's the mitigating factor? So two questions there, if you can address those. And then let's talk a little bit about what you're behind.
Well, we don't know what the cumulative effects are, and that they're not approving, they're not recommending boosters every 3 months. I'm just talking about where the data seems to be moving, that, you know, in a month from now, they'll probably be talking, a couple months from now, they'll probably be talking about that. But the cumulative effects may be that the more boosters you get, you may have increased levels of side effects, from the vaccine. So it's not clear. It'll become more clear over time. And for mitigation, I always recommend people take aspirin every day for at least 30 days after each injection they get. They should take that aspirin for 90 days after they have a natural infection to try to prevent blood clotting. And the zinc is important, vitamin D3, you know, at least 4,000 units a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's really about it on the mitigation. But everybody should be taking vitamin D3, even if you've had COVID already.
Right. Doctor, you had something you wanted to share with everyone.
Yeah, I'm here on double secret probation assignment in Mobile, Alabama right now. And I wanted to talk about a wonderful parish down here, which is the student parish, Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic Student Center. They have a Facebook page by that name, Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic Student Center. And I've got a very dynamic priest who's from Poland and very into the Divine Mercy, Reverend Jurek. And they're having, on Thursday, November 18th at 6 p.m., they're going to have a Eucharistic procession on the secular campus of the University of South Alabama. It's kind of a beautiful campus. They're going to have shuttles, and it's going to be a big deal and a reception afterwards. Right. And I just wanted to invite anybody who might be out there around Mobile, Alabama, or was interested in doing something like this, which is a real declaration of faith.
That's great.
That, you know, that they look at the Facebook page for Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic Student Center, Thursday, November 18th at 6 p.m. And they're going to have shuttles.
That's awesome.
I think the Archbishop might be involved as well. So it'd be a real big thing.
Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention, because two things. One, a little bit later in my final hour today, we're going to be talking about Eucharistic miracles and, you know, our faith in the Eucharist. There's been diminishing belief in it to, I think, the detriment of the church and the country and those who fall into that category. And also coming up in just a moment, you talk about Catholic identity. There's a Catholic university in Los Angeles that allowed a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. And we'll talk about what's happening on college campuses. What a beautiful alternative. If you can, join them for this Eucharist procession. Let's pray for, you know, our educational institutions, and let's pray for belief and for our church as well. Doctor, stay safe. Looking forward to catching up with you again. I always appreciate your time.
Take care. God bless everyone.
Thank you. That's Dr. Robert Tabali. You can also check him out at germbusters.com, that Facebook page. And Maggie, maybe we can share it, the Sacred Heart Center, over our Facebook page. So people who follow us will find it right there. And you can follow us on Facebook just by doing a search for The Drew Mariani Show. Follow us on Twitter the same way. We'd love to have you. Okay, stay in touch with you when we're off the air. I'm going to take a short pause when we come back. I'll fill you in on what's happening at some of these college campuses. And boy, do we need prayer. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show. Connected. Connected. Relevant Radio.
Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, I am traveling to the Holy Land in February with our underwriting sponsor, Nativity Pilgrimage. Information is available at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. That's relevantradio.com/Holy Land.
Loyola Marymount University, a private Jesuit and Marymount Research University in Los Angeles, California, is planning to host a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood on November 5th. The university's event website describes the fundraiser as a, quote, opportunity for us to raise money for a cause we really care about and have fun at the same time.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, great to be here with you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. You heard that story, right? Boy, a lot going on campuses all over the nation. And you got to check this one out, too. You talk about Catholic identity. I'm going to tell you what happened at a Catholic university in Los Angeles. But before I do, the University of North Dakota, let me tell you what happened there. There's a policy being considered. This comes after the rape of a young girl in a school bathroom in Virginia. Remember that story of the male wearing a skirt? So women are now finding themselves with male roommates wearing female clothing, you know, arriving at school freshman year. As a father, that would disturb me. And my heart goes out. I would always be compassionate and loving. But the University of North Dakota is considering a policy that would change, or would impose, I really should say, gender inclusion mandates on nearly every facet of university life, including dorm life. I don't want a guy sleeping in the same dorm as my daughter, you know, my 17-year-old daughter or 18-year-old daughter or whatever, how old your daughter's going to be. You know, and that's for housing, that's for students would be allowed to stay with those who have gender identity and expression. If they identify as, if a male identifies as a female, he can stay there. So that's just one story. A lot of other things are happening there. A lot of Christian schools are under attack. Hey, Maggie, you were just telling me about a new university being formed as well. And this is kind of a response to what we're seeing here. Where is that and what's happening?
Yeah, remember we had played some audio a couple weeks ago from Barry Weiss. She used to be one of the chief editors at the New York Times and kind of defected from that organization because she started to realize how woke, how left-leaning that organization was, that she wasn't able to get to the truth of certain matters. So she and a group of other people who are kind of known as like protectors of free speech, they have combined powers and they're creating a new university called the University of Austin. I was reading about this earlier today. So I looked, I'm on the website right now for uaustin.org. It's not fully fleshed out yet. Like they've decided that they want to do this.
Right.
And so they're hoping to launch classes soon. So like their, what are their pillars, their values, a commitment to freedom of inquiry, a new financial model, innovative curriculum, not just by the greatest thinkers of the world, but also by the greatest doers of the world. So it's, I think it seems interesting.
I think they're going to get full attendance. Yeah, a lot of people, right? They want an alternative because there's lunacy going on. And look, Catholic education has led the world for centuries, you know, with some of the brightest thinkers, some of the most fruitful things have come from our institutions of higher learning. Today, Catholic, you know, education gives me pause in this respect. There's a lot of great universities out there, but I had heard a story that there was a university in Los Angeles, and they allowed a fundraiser for one of the biggest abortion giants in the nation, and that's Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood. That is absolutely horrible. It's lunacy when the Pope calls abortion murder. A Catholic university holds a fundraiser to support abortion. You know, when students at a Catholic high school walk out in protest of a pro-life speaker, or Catholic college students compete for the number of sexual conquests. I got to be careful about what I say here. I mean, some of this stuff gets pretty bizarre. So I've invited to join me today Patrick Riley, longtime friend of the show, president and founder of the Cardinal Newman Society. He has his finger on the pulse of all of what's happening, and we'll bring us up to speed on the latest. Patrick, thank you for your patience today. It's always good to talk with you. Welcome.
Great to be with you, Drew. Thank you.
So you got to fill me in. I know that, I think the 5th was the date that they had this fundraiser for this Catholic institution in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. What happened there? How pervasive is this in the country right now? What's happening with education, you know, at the higher levels, especially within Catholic institutions?
Well, I think so many of our Catholic institutions, unfortunately, have boxed themselves into a corner by adopting ideologies and adopting these ideas of radical freedoms that aren't respectful of the truth. And the point of attending any educational institution is to learn truth. And that's why we have Catholic education, because it is the best opportunity to reach the highest truths and to be able to incorporate what we know by our faith into everything that we study. You know, even that great institution that's being formed down in Austin lacks the truth of the Catholic faith, and that's why we look to Catholic education to provide that. But unfortunately, many of these institutions have bought into gender ideology, into critical race theory, into all of these different ideas that frankly are contrary to the truth and make it difficult for them to respond to things like this when students say they want to literally on campus in a campus facility. This was in the campus dining hall at Loyola Marymount University. It's a institution that's controlled by the Jesuits and also the Marymount Sisters and the Sisters of St. Joseph. And on this campus, at this institution, advertised through the institution, they are holding a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. They raised $4,100 on Friday that will support an organization that is the heart of the culture of death.
Wow. That's not just stunning, it's disgusting. It's terrible.
It's really disgusting.
But, you know, I don't understand how this gets passed. What happened to Catholic identity? And why, I mean, gosh, I don't have words for it. I mean, how does something like this take place, you know, in the halls of a Catholic institution?
Well, so the truths of the Catholic faith are the first thing to go whenever there's any kind of controversy. They'll argue gender ideology. They'll argue, some of the crazy things that we're saying about racial identity and the things that are necessary. And they'll say that these are absolute truths. But then when it comes to the Catholic truth, well, that's something that's negotiable and something that we can't really uphold because we don't want to seem like we're imposing anything on anybody. And the reality is the purpose of an educational institution is to teach truth. And sometimes you have to teach it affirmatively. You can't just assume that this is a place where anything goes and hopefully young people will come to the truth on their own. They will eventually, but they'll do it through a lot of trial and error, and that it really is not the point of education, is to just to set young people out into the wild and have them experience every sort of sinful activity, every sort of dangerous activity, every sort of dangerous idea without trying to help form them and lead them in the right direction.
Patrick, if people want more information, I know you track all of this. It was on your website a little bit earlier, and there's tons of great stories. I think it would be eye-openers to a lot of people. What's the best way to get connected? A lot of people may be considering sending their kids to a school, and I know you're a tremendous resource. What would you suggest, and what can parents do?
Well, certainly look at our website, newmansociety.org. We try to put out this information, and we try to get it out through, you know, obviously through various Catholic media outlets like yours to make sure that people are aware of it. But the key thing is to really understand what is the point of education and what's the purpose. And so we have standards for Catholic education and arguments for why someone should be looking at a Catholic, a faithfully Catholic college or university before considering any other option.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for all that you've done over the years, Patrick. I hope people will get behind you. Hope they'll check you out at newmansociety.org. Okay, it's a great website to check out. We'll catch up again soon. Thank you for your patience today. I look forward to having you back. We'll do it again soon, okay?
Yep.
That's Patrick Riley. Got to pray the chaplet straight ahead. I just received a text from my daughter. I want to share this with you when I came back. Something happened at her church. Wait till you hear this. Don't go away.